Welcome to the Global Energy Leaders Podcast, powered by R Squared Global.
Welcome to another edition of the Global Energy Leaders Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Ryan Ray, episode 62, and it's good to have you along as today we're going to talk about pipelines in the great state of Texas, where I live. And we're going to bring on Turi Cannon with the Texas Pipeline Association to talk about pipelines, the environmental impact, and you know what exactly goes on as far as regulation when building a pipeline. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Turi Cannon. Well, Turi, it's a great day in the great state of Texas. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, Ryan. It's a balmy 98 degrees here in Austin, and so everything is right in the world for July in Texas.
You know, this is a quick side note. We were talking offline about me. I used to live in Louisiana, now I live in Texas, and you know, the humidity, at least up here where I'm at, closer to the DFW Metroplex, it's about 30% lower some days than it was where I'm from. It makes all the difference in the world. Some people might, you know, if you're from Phoenix, might think it's humid, but to me, it makes all the difference in the world. And of course, we always have a nice Texas breeze, which seems to kind of take the edge off of it from time to time.
Exactly.
Okay, well, let's get into it here for our listeners. You are the president of the Texas Pipeline Association. Let's just start there. What is the Texas Pipeline Association? What do you guys do? What do you represent? And where do you fit into the picture of Texas oil and gas scene?
Well, the Texas Pipeline Association is made up of 49 member companies who transport and process natural gas and natural gas liquids in the state of Texas. An interesting fact is we're the only intrastate pipeline association that I'm aware of in the country. And that the reason I like to say that Texas has their own intrastate pipeline association is because we've got more pipeline than anybody else.
Right. Absolutely. So how old is the organization and what brought it about?
It was founded in 1983 by my predecessor, Mr. Patrick Nugent. He started it. I think they had five member companies his first year. And of course, the market was much different back then than it is today. But it necessitated the need for a pipeline association because there were some differences between the production community and the midstream community back then. And so he started the association to address specifically midstream and pipeline issues in front of the government and to be an advocate for solely the midstream industry.
Okay, so you talked about midstream there, and we've had on Texas Railroad Commissioner Ryan Sitton about a month ago. He came on and he talked about, you know, what role the Railroad Commission plays. Do you consider your organization kind of a partner or someone lobbying the Railroad Commission, or completely unrelated?
We do advocacy work at the Railroad Commission, but they, along with numerous other agencies, are one of our regulatory bodies.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's just kind of step back here, and you said you had, I think, 49 members, and so there's a lot of pipe in Texas, and so what are you guys looking to get from a legislative standpoint? What is your main issue right now?
Well, there's numerous issues. We like to advocate for, and we like to educate members about our association, but also about the industry, because we are very proud of our safety record. We're very proud of our environmental record. We're very proud of our relationship that we have with landowners. And so all of these have various issues in front of regulatory bodies such as the Railroad Commission and the legislature. And we also are proud of our relationships with the local communities in which we operate. One of the biggest issues that we just got through with this last session was the passage of the Railroad Commission Sunset Bill. And of course, the Railroad Commission is our major regulatory agency because they do have the sole authority to regulate the pipelines in the state of Texas. So we were happy that they were extended an additional 12 years because that, of course, brings regulatory certainty to our industry and allows us to do business and transport the energy that Texans use every day.
Yeah, and you know, we covered, for the listeners, this will be playing on both our Texas Oil and Gas podcast and the Global Energy Leaders podcast. And so on the Texas Oil and Gas podcast, we talked about the Sunset Committee and what was going on there and kind of our thoughts. There was seemed to be from the environmentalist group that there was a lot of rumblings and they were kind of upset about what happened. What was your takeaway from that?
I thought the Sunset Bill was fantastic. I think that we need a strong regulatory body such as the Railroad Commission. They have done an excellent job. They're probably the preeminent regulatory agency for oil and gas in not only in the country, but I'd even go as far to say as the world. I think the Railroad Commission sunset legislation is going to lead to additional safety measures and additional environmental measures as well.
Okay, so let's talk about that regulation because it seems, at least in the mainstream media, if you turn on news about oil and gas, if there's any type of deregulation, it's almost presented as if that means there's now no regulation. And that's obviously a big misnomer. Let's talk about, just for pipelines in the state of Texas, what are some of the safety measures that, companies have had to adopt, and some things that maybe you'd say we're looking to get more things adopted?
Well, as far as the association goes, we are always looking for ways to improve pipeline safety. As I mentioned before, we're already very extremely proud of our safety record. I think my sister association in Washington, D.C., the Association of Oil Pipelines, they had a study that came out maybe a few years ago that said pipeline safety safely transport 99.999% of all of the products that go through it. A unique thing about the state of Texas, we were the first to engage in integrity management practices, and the feds liked the way we were doing integrity management so much that they adopted it on their own. And furthermore, I think our industry spends at least $1 billion a year, and that's B, and it's billion with a B, on pipeline safety measures to ensure that we're safely transporting our products.
Now, when you mention that 99.999%, it seems as if that almost gets forgotten, that anytime there's a spill or a leak, that pipelines are kind of the culprit. But compared to, I'll let you do it. Lay out the options. If you're going to get oil or gas from the wellhead to a facility, what are the options that producers have? And then let's kind of rank them as far as safest to least safe.
Well, Ryan, I don't have the statistics from what is that. Well, I do have the statistics because I do know that pipelines are by far the safest way to transport. If you're going to get liquids from a wellhead, your only other options are truck, and then the truck goes to a rail that could get it to a manufacturing plant or a processing plant. For natural gas, you really have no other way to transport that except via pipeline.
Right. And so when we see anti-pipeline groups, because it's not safe environmentally or whatever the argument may be, is if you're looking at, you know, trucking it or training it, those aren't safer options. And in fact, they're substantial. I don't have the stats in front of me either, but the stats, the last time I looked at the stats, it was substantially more dangerous to truck or to train something, and it costs a lot more money than it is to put it in a pipeline.
It without a doubt. When you start looking at the numbers for trucks transporting liquids and petroleum by trucks, you look at a truck, and typically a oil and gas truck will transport about 180 barrels in it. Well, a 20-inch pipeline could move probably 300,000 barrels of crude a day through that, through, let's say, 50 miles through a county. So when you do the simple math, if you divide 300, if you have 300,000 divided by 180, well, that takes off 1,650 truck trips per day off of county roads. So I think that's a staggering amount of truck traffic that you can eliminate, and it's safer to transport through pipeline than it is through trucks.
Yeah, and if you think of that number, sometimes numbers become, you know, so large, they're kind of like that B with a billion thing. You know, they're so large it's hard to fathom. But let's just kind of break that down practically. If you're taking truck miles off of the road, A, it should, if the government's doing their job, it should have less impact on the road, which should mean a reduction in taxes for taxpayers. The other thing is, it's just a safety issue, right? The more cars are on the road, the more chance there is for accidents and fatal accidents. And so there's a lot of things that are going on there when we do take these big, heavy trucks off the road. I'm not anti-trucking, obviously, but it's just a reality. And if we can say, okay, well, instead of trucking, we can pipeline it, it just makes sense because it is safer.
Exactly. And we, of course, are not anti-trucks either. In Texas, as you know from living here, we need all kinds of transportation options. It's just so for hydrocarbons, by far the most efficient and effective way to transport is via pipeline. Not only is it more efficient and safer to transport it through pipeline, it's also more environmentally friendly to transport it through pipeline.
Okay, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the environmental impact of a pipeline. Now, I've worked in pipelines that have been regulated by FERC and all these different agencies, and so I don't want to go through each governing body and how they impact a pipeline being built. But from the standpoint of building a pipeline, I have yet to work on a pipeline where I've seen them come out and say, oh, there's a wetland, we're going to tear it up and not tell anybody. Because if they get caught, the impact is, you know, outrageous as far as what they would get fined and all the problems. These companies, they actually have to protect the environment. Most of them don't even impact the direct wetland. They're going to bore underneath it, or if they do, they have to pay mitigation credits, right? And so walk us through maybe what the perception is if you think about environmental impact from a pipeline, but what's actually the reality when these companies are engaging with crossing wetlands?
That's really kind of a company-specific issue that I'd like to leave to answer from the companies. But I mean, but you're exactly right, Ryan, when you say we have immense regulations that when we have to survey the route, and if there is a route, we are going to find the most environmentally sensitive way to cross that. As far as, like, when we bore under a river, or we're making sure that we're not contaminating any kind of water. And we never, of course, the economic impact for a pipeline company, we never want to lose product, because if just for economic purposes, if we lose product, that's less money out of the company's pocket.
No. You're right. I guess let me rephrase the question. What I was getting at is that on the project where we've encountered wetlands, the decision was kind of, okay, hey, either we're gonna bore underneath this thing, or if we're gonna open cut it, then it changes the jurisdiction of our line to a different type of classification, which means the whole line is now gonna be more scrutinized. And so I guess my point really was is that when we're coming across wetlands as pipeline professionals, we are actually taking a lot of precautions, either to A, avoid them, like you said, or B, it's not as simple as we get to go tear up the wetland and there's no repercussions. It's if you are going to open cut through a wetland, it is kind of a process to get that done, and it impacts how the rest of your pipeline is monitored from an environmental standpoint.
You're exactly right, Ryan.
Okay, so let's talk about safety. I think that's one of the final things I really want to touch on today is safety. Let's just talk about just the steps of, not from the standpoint of the transportation, we've talked about that, but working on pipelines. You know, we always want to see people who can do labor, get paid good jobs, but we want them to be safe jobs. And so what are some of the strides that you've seen as far as being safe while working on the pipeline?
I know that our companies, the members of TPA, we certainly, they train their inspectors for in-house. And then we have always, from an association standpoint, we have always encouraged the feds and the state to employ more pipeline safety inspectors, because we want to make sure that our lines are up to regulatory par, and we want to make sure that people are watching us just the way we're watching them, watching ourselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so just before we let you go, companies out there, I think is it 250 miles of pipe in the state of Texas that can join your group? Is that right?
Yes, sir. And there's some numbers regarding processing as well, if they would like to join the Texas Pipeline Association.
Right. So it's not just for big, huge oil and gas companies, though. This is for even the smaller midstream companies. They could fit into this. And what would be a membership benefit to join your organization?
Well, we pride ourselves on educating our members and keeping them on the pulse of what's going on in state government at their legislative level and at the Railroad Commission and TC and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality level. We happily go visit with local chambers of commerce to, I guess, spread the gospel, if you will, on the safety of pipelines and the environmental record of pipelines and the economic impact of pipelines.
Well, according to the website here, texaspipelines.com, we'll link to the show notes, it says that there's about 328,000 miles of pipeline in Texas, and we know that number is only going to grow and grow and grow over the next 5 to 10 years, just with the Eagle Ford and the Permian. And
I think I need to update my website, because there's 425,000 miles of pipeline in Texas, and out of that number, it's roughly about 379,000 of those are strictly intrastate pipeline miles.
Okay, wow. Well, then we will go with that number, regardless of what the number is. Even if you had it right on the website today, it's changing by the minute, because there are lines being laid all the time. And so, you know, the Permian is going to be booming for some time, the Eagle Ford. And then I've even heard talk recently that maybe the Barnett is going to get a second wind and come back to life. So it'll be interesting to see. But love to hear from groups like yourself who come out here and say, hey, this is what we're for. We're for the environment. We're for safety. And we're for getting the product to the consumer, because that is something that kind of gets lost in all this discussion over pipelines and oil and gas. Is it good? Is it bad? Is that at the end of the day, we're trying to get something safely from the wellhead to the consumer so they can drive their cars, they can feed their family, they can do all this stuff that we kind of forget. Yeah, okay, it's this oil, it's gas, it's polluting the environment. Well, right now, this is how we power our world. And so we appreciate what you guys do. And is there anything else that you'd like to plug or promote before I let you go today?
Well, I certainly appreciate you having me, Ryan. I'd like to touch on what you briefly touched on then is the economic impact. I mean, I've got to brag on Texas Tech did a study of strictly the intrastate pipeline market in Texas. And they said, looking through roughly this year to 2024, the pipeline industry, just the midstream industry, is going to infuse the Texas economy with $374 billion in total economic impact. And it's going to sustain about 171,000 jobs a year. It's going to deliver about $1.5 to $2 billion per year in state and local government revenues. So I think the economic impact always is always a shining star for the state of Texas and for the pipeline industry.
Absolutely. TexasPipelines.com, we'll link to that in the show notes, is where you can find out more information. And again, even if you're not an Exxon, not a Shell, not a big enterprise products, you know, you might be able for membership. I think I was 250 miles of pipe, and there's some other requirements. We will link to TexasPipelines.com in the show notes so the listeners can go and check that out. Turi, thank you so much for coming on. We really enjoyed the discussion today.
Thank you so much, Ryan, and please feel free to reach out to me directly if you have any questions or I can be of any assistance.
Thanks again to Texas Pipeline Association and Turi Cannon for coming on. For more information, go visit their website, TexasPipelines.com, and also we'll be linking to some of their reports as they come out on GlobalEnergyMedia.com. The Global Energy Leaders Podcast is produced by Michael Sims and Chris Prine. Chris Prine also serves as editor for the Global Energy Leaders Podcast. Until next time, keep climbing.
Thanks for listening to the Global Energy Leaders Podcast, powered by R Squared Global.